Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you. It is a Tuesday. We are glad to be with you on a Tuesday. And every day, whether you're listening to us over the air on KFH, whether you are watching us on our video streams on 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X, or whether you're listening to us on either the Odyssey app, the iHeartRadio app, we appreciate you each and every way that you join the program. We are getting closer to football season. Our guy Felix Johnson's going to be in next segment. We'll get with him on this Trey Smith discussion we're having and everything else going on in the football world, in the Chiefs world as well. And then maybe a little bit more on the Royals as we continue to look ahead to their second half. I saw another trade rumor involving Seth Lugo that made me want to vomit last night. So we'll get to that a little bit later. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, locations east, west, and historic Delano, featuring a rooftop deck. Wichita Brewing Company, pizza, beer made here. We'll get you an HTO giveaway a little bit later in the show. And we want to say thank you to Crestview Country Club for their great support of the program. Tommy, they're going to have to, they got to do a little tree work. That storm, it was so remarkable that everybody got the Wichita Open off, but now the storm, we were playing out there the other day and they've marked a bunch of trees. They've got to get that cleaned up from storm damage and a variety of other things. It'll feel a little different. So if you've played Crestview in about 2 or 3 weeks, I don't know how long this work's going to take. It's going to probably, you know this better than I do, it's probably going to play as a different golf course in a lot of ways.
Well, it'll play probably easier, at least for some holes where you don't have to worry about navigating through the trees, right, and that sort of thing. But yeah, they've got a lot of work ahead of them. They've already done a bunch of cleanup, but there are some trees that, because of the damage that came through last month, that they've got to fully remove. And so they'll be working on that for the next few weeks. But what I like about it is, you know, they're very communicative to everybody out there. Like, hey, we're doing this. There might be some shifts in tee times and hole closures and things like that, but there are two courses. And so you have the option and the opportunity to go and play. You know, they're not going to shut down both at the same time. So it's not, it shouldn't really negatively impact a lot of people out there.
We're trying to play Friday. We might play like front nine on one of them and back nine on the other. We're going to try and piece together 18 holes, and you get those options even when the work's happening. So we appreciate their support of the program. Give Crestview a call. Give Todd a call, who does memberships, and ask him about all the deals and packages that they've got going right now. We continue on here. The Trey Smith, just to continue what you said, then we'll talk to Felix Johnson about this. And I think, yes, Tommy, there is clarity in the extension now. But again, unless he's willing to take less money, I still don't think it benefits the Chiefs in any way to do it yet. So he's going to, on the tag, be the highest paid guard. If he'll come back and, let's say, take 4 years and $80 million, which would not make him the highest paid guard, it'd put him right there. Then I would have some appetite for the Chiefs. Like, if I'm the Chiefs, I'm like, okay, There's some incentive for us to do that. Otherwise, he's on the tag going to make the most this year. So if you wait till the offseason and he still wants to be the highest paid guard, his price didn't go up. You know what I mean? Like, if his price tag right now is basically a long term, because I believe it's 21-ish million for the highest paid guard right now in football. Smith's going to make 23. If he wants to make 23 over time and be the highest paid guard now, it's essentially going to be the same price tag as if they waited. What's he going to say? He wants to come back and make 28? Because they'll never do it, right? And he has to know that. No team would do that. So if he is going to reset the market anyway, I don't think the timing component matters, whether it's now or the end of this season. It's if he takes a slight discount that if I'm the Chiefs, I'm interested in doing it now versus later. But again, you have to make sure your tackle situation is secure, whether that's Josh Simmons and Jalen Moore on the bookends after this season and some combination of Caliendo, Suamataia, Wanye Morris in a swing role. Like, you got to know what you need first before you make the big commitment to Smith. If I'm the Chiefs, I just have to look at it that way. And if you're wondering what the urgency on Smith's end might be, what if the Chiefs over the course of this season learn that Suamataia and Wanya Morris are both really good as guards? You think they're going to pay Trey Smith $23 million a year? Because they won't.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's necessarily the risk to Trey Smith, because I'm not sure that either one of those guys are going to be
Outside of the injury risk, it's injury.
It is 100% injury.
But I think that's a risk.
And if I'm Trey Smith, why not cash in on the great play that I've had over the last 4 years in my career? Why not try to cash in with that right now and have some stability?
Well, he is cashing in. I mean, he's going to be the highest paid guard in football this year.
I understand that, but why not cash in long term? Why not ink that contract now?
But what I'm saying is, and I don't have a problem with that, it's got to be less than resetting the market, though. You know what I mean? Like, cash in for sure. He should. He's awesome.
Right.
And I hope he does.
But that's the leverage. But, like, I think that's the leverage the Chiefs have a little bit in this, is that their argument to Trey Smith ought to be, look, like, if what happens if you play on this franchise tag? And yeah, you'll be the highest paid guard in the NFL for one season. But what happens if you get hurt? What happens if, you know, and your leverage totally goes away and your value drops significantly and you decide you do want to hit the open market and you end up getting a lot less money? Like, that's always the major risk in not cashing in and signing a long-term deal when it's presented to you. The way that I see it right now is that nothing is guaranteed in life. We have no idea. And it might not even be injury risk. It might be you see a regression in his overall skills in this coming year. I think that's unlikely, but you never know. And so you know what you have. You know what your value is right now. You don't know what it's going to be a year from now. Maybe it'll go up, but maybe it won't. And so why not cash in on that right now if you're Trey Smith and go, and I'm sure that his representation is doing this, at least I would hope they are, not going into a situation saying we want to reset the market long term, but more of, hey, we want to cash in appropriately. He can be the highest paid guard in the NFL long term, but we're not going to try to have some kind of absolutely outrageous contract ask.
I don't think it's outrageous. I think they probably are trying to reset the market by a million or two. But again, like, to me, the Chiefs hold all the chips here. There is absolutely no urgency to me that I can come up with for the Chiefs to want to do to cave on this. Like, they don't need to. There's nothing pushing them into doing that, right? What is the risk of the Chiefs waiting? If he walks, he walks. But I just don't see the risk. I mean, by waiting, you are alleviating your inherent risk of injury, obviously, by not doing it now if you're the Chiefs. You have an easy justification with the tag paying him, you know, tackle money, basically, that you're like, there's no reason for him to hold out.
I mean, look, you did ask the question about how does it benefit the Chiefs to not have him play on the tag this year, and whether we're talking $1 million or $2 million or $3 million in cap space that they free up, they may not go and get anybody right away, but there are always situations where during the season they could use a couple extra $1 million in salary cap space and flexibility to be able to try to figure out a free agent situation due to injury or whatever the case might be. They've done that so many times throughout the years. Every team does. And if you're in a situation, and it could come down to having an extra $1 million laying around or $2 million laying around just as an emergency backup fund for during the season to go and try to get better for a playoff push or whatever the case might be, that may be reason in and of itself to try to free up even a couple $1 million by converting what he's going to be making on the franchise tag to what they would be getting in a long-term deal.
But they have $10 million free now. They have that. Like, they're
right now, they do. They might not win. We get to week 14 or
right,
week 15.
But if you know, you might not have 10 if you utilize some of that for Trey Smith. What if he says he wants $24 million on a, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what he wants, and that's what makes this a little trickier. We don't know exactly what he's asking for. I hope that Trey Smith is a Chief forever. He is awesome. I just, in this particular negotiation, can't find the good reason why the Chiefs should jump the gun here. We'll see if Felix Johnson has one. He's an offensive line guy. It would be different if the Chiefs ran the ball a ton and you know, needed that critically to the future. But the Chiefs ain't gonna run the ball this year. the Chiefs ain't going to run the ball next year or probably the year after that. I wouldn't think, not the way they've drafted wide receiver and have invested in tackles and wide receivers. They just like they want to throw the ball. They have Mahomes. They want to do it that way. It's Andy Reid. That's what they do. They're not going to line up and run it as much as the Eagles or the Colts or some of these other teams that have also paid guards heavily. But the Chiefs will do it. They paid Joe Tooney. They paid Joe Tooney a lot. So they and they paid Creed Humphrey, too. We'll see. Deadline is today. We'll get Felix Johnson's take on that. We'll get you that Seth Lugo trade rumor. And Tommy's found something here. Apparently NCAA tournament expansion could come into beer sponsorships, which is interesting. It's all coming for you. Felix Johnson's next. Don't go away. More Sports Daily coming right up.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Let's give away a little HTO for you here. We are still trying to connect with Felix Johnson, but you can win some HTO right now. You can text the keyword T to the short code 20357. Again, that's T to 20357. You can get a free iced tea on us. Good for East Wichita, West Wichita, or Derby. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck there, everybody. If you come to West Wichita on Saturday, you will have a chance from 11 to 8 to get some lobster from the Maine's Cousins Lobster Food Truck. Famous food truck coming into town. So come out Saturday, get your free tea, even if you don't get a free tea, and get some lobster to go through. Tea and lobster, Tommy. That's a thing. That's what the kids on the street are saying.
It's like peanut butter and jelly, right? It's like this generation's peanut butter and jelly, tea and lobster.
That's right. Tea and lobster.
Do you say lobster or lobster? Because I know lobster. Max says lobster because he's Boston.
I don't say lobster. I'm not.
I never say lobster.
Lobster, right?
Lobster.
Lobster with lots of butter.
There you go. Butter.
How's that?
It's like butter.
It's good. I'm more of a clam chowder connoisseur up in the Northeast myself. We went to a place this weekend, and you know the kind of build your own like Mongolian grill style places.
Yeah,
my kid, there were mussels in there in the shell, like basically clams.
Yeah,
and my kids were like, oh, you know, it was the dare, like dare you, Dad. I'm like, all right, like I'm not going to turn that down. But everyone ended up having some clam, and it was fine.
There was a Stooges episode.
You're going to die if you eat that. Go ahead, Max.
There was a Stooges episode where Curly had the clam chowder, and the clam kept squirting him in the face.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's never happened to me.
They're a comedy team, you youngsters.
I know. Yeah, I'm familiar with them.
We're aware of the Stooges.
I'm familiar with their work.
Yeah. Seen it a few times. Yeah, it's when I go to the last time I went to Boston, it's been nine years now. And I love that city. For me, like I can't eat enough clam chowder. Like just everywhere I go, I got to have it. Speaking of our friends at Crestview Country,
it doesn't matter if you're in Boston or if you're in Dodge City. Like if there's clam chowder, you're going to rock.
I'm gonna have some
clam chowder. I like clam chowder too. Don't get me wrong. Like I'm a fan of it. I'll eat it. I like seafood in general.
I like all the chowders in general too. Yeah. Not, you know, like corn chowder.
What do you like better, clam chowder or lobster bisque?
Clam chowder.
Really? Like, I'm a lobster bisque guy. Like, give that to me any day. And I don't like just like the broth. You got to have some big old chunks of lobster in the bisque.
Yeah, so my thing is, and I'm excited for this food truck to come over to the West Side store Saturday, because lobster, while fine, I've always said I want to try theirs because I've heard it's incredible. And I've never had a lobster roll, which is, I think, their main thing that they're known for. Yeah. So I'm excited to try that too. But like, if I'm going to a restaurant, instead of surf and turf, I just want the turf, right? I'd rather just have a steak than steak and lobster.
Really?
Lobster's not my... I don't dislike lobster. Lobster is fine, but lobster's fine. Right? It's a lot of work. It's only good because it's doused in butter. Like,
I don't know about that. It's not only good because it's doused in butter.
But I'm saying, like, it's a sweeter meat, and I'm definitely a saltier person than I am sweet.
Yeah,
so it's... Yeah, yeah. It's good. It's good, but is it like the delicacy some people treat it as? Probably not for me. But again, I do want to try these lobster rolls this weekend because I've heard they're like the real deal awesome. But when I go to the parts of the world where lobster, like Boston, I just want all the clam chowder I can.
I mean, I think that lobster immediately elevates whatever meal that you're currently having. You throw a lobster tail on with your steak, makes it that much better. You throw in chunks of lobster into your mac and cheese, boom, it's a delicacy. You throw chunks of lobster into basically tomato soup. I know it's different. Bisque is different than that. But generally speaking, that's kind of what it is. Makes it that much better. So anything you do lobster-wise just elevates whatever you're eating.
And of the shellfish, I would rather have scallops. Scallops, I think, are better. I love scallops.
I like scallops.
Like the big ones.
Yeah, I'm not going to turn any kind of seafood down. I mean, I love shrimp. I love crab legs. Like, give it all to me. I'm
crab
a fan.
I'm also not as in on crab as most people. Again, same thing. It's kind of sweet. Like, okay. Like, it's good. It's fine. I'm not going to turn it away either. I'll eat it. I'll eat anything though. But yeah, I prefer lobster over crab. I'll say that. I don't know that I prefer it over shrimp. It's fine. They're probably on par with shrimp, but I'll take a scallop over lobster. I would take a scallop or clam chowder, which is not really comparable, but
it's not.
You know, if we're that's
an appetizer. That is not your actual meal.
No. If I have my way and I can get a bucket of it, it's no longer an appetizer.
You're the one that just said that clam chowder is not comparable to everything
because
else we just talked about.
Because soup is not a meal.
You're proving my point.
Is clam compared to lobster?
I mean, from a quality perspective, I don't know. I love oysters, by the way.
Yeah, you got me on oysters.
I love oysters on the half shell.
They were good. I don't know that it had the aphrodisiac effect I was hoping for, but it was fine. That's really the only reason
I let you talk to know.
Hang on, disclaimer. Disclaimer. It was not just Tommy and I having oysters when I talked about the aphrodisiac effect.
Our wives were there. Yeah.
Our wives were there.
Thank you for clarifying that.
I'm not sure it had that effect. So that was what I was really hoping for. I was like, yeah, let's take it down. Let's have 12. No, didn't work. John Denver's full of, you know what? All right. So here's the trade rumor I saw. We'll see if we can connect with Felix Johnson. No worries. If not, here's the trade rumor I saw last night. It made me sick to my stomach. It was Newsweek, I think, that had it, or I don't remember, Bleacher
Newsweek.
Report something. I think Newsweek was reporting on a Bleacher Report report. It popped up in my feed.
They were taking a break from covering the Russia-Ukraine war to talk about a Seth Lugo.
No, Newsweek's more of a magazine, I think, like a
Newsweek
style. Yeah.
Are we talking about the same Newsweek? Newsweek is like hard-hitting journalism.
It popped up. I think Newsweek is more tabloidy. It popped up in my feed for some reason because I know what the reason was is because Seth Lugo was mentioned, and it was reporting a Bleacher Report, I believe. But anyway, it was Seth Lugo to the Astros.
Ugh.
As a trade. That can, I'm just like, don't do that. Like, don't do that. If the house is on fire and the Astros are the only way to, you know, save the, don't do that. Don't do that, Royals. But it was interesting because they have a need. They have a fit. They've got a relatively deep farm system. But it did go into, and once I read it, I was like, well, this is just somebody like pondering ideas. There wasn't any substance to it. But it did. Like, it's kind of the same thing, and it brought up the same point we've been having. But the Royals are still trying to decide what they're going to end up doing anyway. And they can absolutely justify keeping Seth Lugo for a potential playoff push. Boy, I can't remember a team more on the line with a player more on the line than this situation this year off the top of my head. Because it could go any direction. Like, no matter what the Royals decide to do, whether they're aggressive, whether they're passive, whether they're buyers, whether they're sellers, they could make a different Seth Lugo decision based on what they want to do because the market dictates that they make the decision. It's a wild one. He is a rental, but man, he's going to be the best pitcher on the market. I think even as a rental, and that hasn't clamored the same sort of like prospect return in the past, but I still think that's what you command. You demand teams start with if they even want to pick up the phone and make the call.
I think knowing the fact that the Royals starting rotation has started to get a little decimated here and it's getting a little tricky. Mm-hmm. Michael Lorenzen just hit the IL yesterday, and he might only miss a couple of starts, but still he's on the IL with an oblique. You've got Cole Reagans on the shelf, and we don't know what his timetable for return looks like. If you trade Seth Lugo, then all of a sudden you're looking awfully thin in what had been your deepest area on your roster. And so I understand the whole thought of getting a return for him and what if he walks and you can't re-sign him and et cetera, et cetera. But at least in the short term, I don't know what they would do starting pitcher-wise. It might very well be that if they move Seth Lugo and you've got Lorenzen on the shelf and you've got Reagans on the shelf, we could see 74-year-old Rich Hill come up and pitch.
And who's Daniel Lynch on the shelf.
And Daniel Lynch on the shelf as well. But you could see, you know, senior citizen Rich Hill pitching for the Royals.
Didn't they just sign Dallas Keuchel.
They've got another senior citizen and Dallas Keuchel in the minors. Like, you've got two guys that, I mean, Dallas Keuchel's like 37 or 38.
He's actually not that old.
But yeah. Rich Hill's like 45 years old and he's in AAA right now. And I guess apparently he's pitching decently well, but that would be your backup plan. If you move Seth Lugo and you've got Reagans, Lorenzen, and Lynch all currently on the IL.
When you sent me that with Keuchel, my very first thought was, are they going to trade Lugo? My second thought was, is Reagans okay? And now it's just like, I'm kind of glad they have him. I don't know about Keuchel. I don't know how he's done, but Rich Hill anyway, like I'm kind of glad they have this depth. I think that Lorenzen's probably okay. The timing on it, boy. And two, like, how strange is that, that it was initially illness and now it's an oblique strain?
Yeah.
And all I can think about is he was so violently ill, he strained his oblique from, like,
you ever
puking.
Been there? That's not, I mean,
yes.
You have a bad bowl of clam chowder, that'll do it for you.
Yes, it will. It'll send you right there. But, man, like, yes, I have puked so hard that I pull a muscle in my stomach.
You're also not a professional athlete.
Yeah, but some people are violent pukers. I'm a violent puker. Like, if I'm going to puke, the whole house is going
to
hear it.
I don't need to know
that. But like, my wife could, and she doesn't as a habit. I don't know when the last time she threw up was, but nobody would ever know it happened. But you know what I'm talking. It's like a loud sneezer. You're either a quiet sneezer or a loud sneezer. You're either a loud puker. Or you're quiet, Peter.
There are some things that are okay to be left to the imagination. I don't need to know how loudly you puke.
When I hear that he is ill and then has a strained oblique, that's what me. I'm like, oh, man, I've been there. That sucks. But the good news, if that is the case, is that it's probably a short stay. What I hope isn't the case is that he had an oblique strain, a real one, like a real deep one or something, and they were just like, I don't know, let's say he's ill, or they didn't know what it was yet. That would be worse because those injuries do linger.
What I think is a little makes me a little bit nervous about the Lorenzen injury is the fact that he didn't pitch on Saturday. They scratched him from his start and they said he was ill. If they felt like, okay, this is a manageable thing and not serious or whatever, you've got the All-Star break this week. And so you wouldn't need to necessarily put him on the IL if it's something where it's like, all right, well, he'll bounce back. We were able to cover for him and said that he was sick on Saturday, and then he'll have the entire week of the All-Star break to get healthy again. They didn't do that. They put him on the IL retroactive to July 11th.
And the 15, not the 10.
Right. So, I mean, I do think this is a little bit more serious than maybe what initially was thought.
Yeah, I do too. And it means he'll miss at least one start. If they reset the rotation and that starts on Friday and he can't come back till the 26th, he'll have to miss at least one turn through the rotation. So that's, I assume at this point, a bullpen game is what they'll do. Although if he's on the IL, they may call up a spot starter. I don't know. But I hope that it is something that developed from being ill and not something that it, because those core injuries, man, they feel like there's some of those that are annoying. They last a while. And for a pitcher, it's not going to, like, he has to be able to strike. You can't power through that really in baseball, whether you're swinging a bat or, you know, trying to wind up and give your full delivery. That's not good. It's not good. No. And as we have Seth Lugo discussions, their rotation continues to thin out now. You're down Reagans for a while. You're down Lorenzen. You're down Lynch as a backup plan. You're basically into the territory where you've got, you know, you got Lugo, you've got Walker, you've got Cameron, you've got Bubich. You're good. But there's not really now any sort of obvious backup plan.
Yeah, you don't have much of a margin here. And the guys that they really have liked as pitchers that we thought maybe initially would be a part of the rotation, I think injury-wise, they're still a decently far away from coming back. Guys like Alec Marsh and Kyle Wright, doesn't look like they're anywhere near coming back to the rotation. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't sign guys like Rich Hill and Dallas Keuchel
right
away from the retirement home. So I don't know if that's a plan. But man, like, what was the deepest part of their roster is all of a sudden starting to look awfully thin. And especially if they make a Seth Lugo move, it gets even more thin.
I know I like to ask you this all the time. Where do you think Seth Lugo's pitching in August?
I think he'll still be with the Royals. I don't think the Royals will move him.
I do too. That bakes in that we both think they'll be playing well over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But I agree.
They do have, we saw this yesterday, they do have the second easiest strength of schedule remaining in Major League Baseball. And they have the easiest in the American League.
We can start that discussion. Let's start it. So no matter what metric you look at, and they're all a little bit different with strength of schedule, They are near the most advantageous schedule remaining in baseball, no matter what you look at, somewhere in the best third of playing the softest schedule. Some have them like second, right? Here's what it boils down to. And remember that they're a team under 500 when I say this too, because I looked at this yesterday as a way to simplify it because everybody uses different formulas. It's basically how many series do they play against teams that are currently 500 or better or worse. And there's 21 series remaining in the season. 13 of them for the Royals right now will come against teams that are currently below 500. 13 out of 21. So it's a significant amount. And the other good thing about it is, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, three out of the next four, which will come before the trade deadline, three out of those four are teams below 500. I don't know what people think about the Marlins because they kind of got hot there for a second, but at least with the Nationals, like, and some of them are against really bad teams, like not just like teams like the Royals that are a couple of games under 500, but actually kind of good, like bona fide, like not very good teams. This is their opportunity to climb back in right now and over this second half. And if we do believe of all of these teams that are real close, the schedule's going to matter. Right? The schedule's going to matter. And the other good thing about it is, too, like when you play a bunch of teams that are currently above 500, those probably, for the most part, aren't the teams that you're realistically going to catch for a playoff spot. All these other teams that are kind of hovering right there, every time you play one of them, you're essentially playing a team that you've got to beat out for the wild card, which is also good news.
And remember, a year ago, they started off their season with a pretty soft schedule. They played the White Sox a ton to kick off the season last year, and that really helped propel them. The fact that, you know, they're now hovering around 500 at the All-Star break, but you know you've got a significantly easier schedule, I do think that that should play a role in the decisions that J.J. Piccolo makes. Like, it's not just where they are right now, and it's not just where they are in the wild card race right now. It's what they've got in front of them. And if it was a stacked opponent schedule for the next couple of months, it might be a little bit different. But they've got an opportunity here with the teams that they play coming up, not just in the next 2 weeks before the deadline, but after that, to really gain some ground.
Yeah, it's now or never, and that's why you hate seeing the Lorenzen news. But the reality is, and we saw this bubble up in the Mets series, you're going to have to score runs. Lorenzen doesn't have anything to do with that. They didn't score enough runs in the Mets series, so hopefully they bounce back in that way too.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And now we welcome in Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider, our football insider, joining the program. Felix, I got you. Listen, when you make us go off the rails, I debate Tommy on whether Michael Lorenzen's oblique strain came from puking too hard. So
we're glad that you're here because we need to get things back on track.
That's what happens here on Sports Daily.
I'm not the guy that gets things back on track, so I'm shocked. I'm the reliever here. That's crazy.
We come back in and let's talk a little football. Felix, you'll find him on X at Felix R. Johnson. Always doing great work in a variety of places that you can follow along with. You've got the Talk Ball podcast. You've got Arrowhead Addict and a variety of other places. So Trey Smith is the most notable thing happening with the Chiefs right now. Let's come at it this way for you. Do you think the Chiefs have the appetite for a long-term deal with Trey Smith at this point? At this point, as of July 15th for this coming season?
No. Probably just because it's a little late. Hypothetically, yes, obviously they would want to. But we've talked about it before where Trey Smith was a sixth-round pick and with a first-round talent because of all the different health issues and whatever, they kind of won that pick. They kind of won that instance already. And so it's a lot easier to say, all right, we're business can continue on. We're kind of done with that situation because he's way outpriced. And when you think about the Kansas City Chiefs are paying or will be paying if they do decide to extend Trey Smith, 4 out of their 5 offensive linemen moving forward, everybody except for their left tackle. And so it is going to be a little bit more difficult from a financial perspective to say, yeah, keep Trey Smith. But at the same time, it makes all the sense in the world because where the NFL's trending now, we're seeing a lot more guards get paid, more not more than tackles, obviously, but just on a higher level that like a guy like Quentin Nelson is going to be a higher paid player in the NFL because he's Quentin Nelson, a high-level guard. And so Trey Smith is going to be in that category of a guy that can get paid a high amount of money by the Chiefs or otherwise. And so the Chiefs may not even be able to offer him the same amount of money just the same way that, like, Joe Tooney ends up with the Chicago Bears. There may be another team out there that can offer him more money or may need him more, and the Chiefs can trade him or whatever the case may be.
I do think that there are advantages for both sides to try to get something done by – the deadline today. I mean, for Trey Smith, first and foremost, nothing's ever guaranteed. I mean, what, you know, he plays on the tag this year. What if he gets injured and then the value totally goes away? And why not cash in on the 4 years that he's had of significant success to try to make that money right now and be locked in? And then for the Chiefs on the other side too, man, like I know that they're trying to see what they've got in Kingsley Suamataia on the left side, but they already have question marks at one guard position. And if you end up not having Trey Smith long term, you may actually have question marks at both guard positions. I feel a lot more confident with the Chiefs not signing Trey Smith to a long term deal if they knew that they had left guard shored up.
Yeah, and I think that Kansas City, again, they're a little bit flawed like every NFL team is. And I think that offensive line is at least the how they go about fixing it is kind of a little bit flawed, which is kind of shocking to me that Andy Reid is a former offensive lineman. Andy Heck has been around with the team for a very long time, but I think they're like, all right, let's just fix left tackle this year and figure that out, and then we'll deal with the other situations later, because we found Trey Smith in the sixth round, because we went and got Joe Tooney in free agency, because we got Creed Humphrey in the second round, because we have Kingsley Suamataia. So they, I think they have other plans at the interior offensive line positions aside from left tackle, and then they're going to have to figure out right tackle at some point if the Juwan Taylor number gets too big. And so I think that Kansas City has – other priorities at the offensive line spot. I mean, obviously Trey Smith is number one, but then after that, it's like, yeah, we got to figure out left tackle and these other things. And then we can figure out the succession plan if Trey Smith were to walk with Joe Tooney already gone.
So when I look at the guards right now, Felix, I look at the highest paid guards, and Smith, of course, will make more than any of them on the tag. But Landon Dickerson is your highest paid right now, Philadelphia. Chris Lindstrom, Atlanta. Quentin Nelson, you mentioned, Indianapolis. Robert Hunt, Carolina. Those are your top guys at the moment, all making $20 million or more. And to me, I look at it and I see four teams that want to run the football. Mm-hmm. Chiefs have no interest in running the football. And I think they just, like, as much as I love Trey Smith and you love Trey Smith and everybody who's ever watched football loves Trey Smith because he's awesome, I just can't find the urgency from the Chiefs to jump the gun and not let this play out. I think they'd love to keep Trey Smith, but I think they have to have a discussion on, do we as the Chiefs, who throw the ball as much as we do, want to invest that much in an interior lineman?
Well, and I think that who are the Chiefs going up against the most in practice? Themselves. And so who are they going to have to defend against? It's Chris Jones. And when you look at the entirety of the NFL, you got Quinnen Williams, Dexter Lawrence, Jeffrey Simmons, a lot of different guys that are able to fit that Chris Jones type, that Aaron Donald type of interior defensive lineman. You need a guard to match up with them, whether it is in the run game or in the passing game. And so I think you're right. These are a bunch of teams that want to run the football with the Eagles, the Panthers, are different teams that want to do a bunch of different things in the run game. But at the same time, the way the NFL is kind of moving is that we're seeing more pass rushers in the interior of defensive lines, like Chris Jones, like Quinnen Williams, like Dexter Lawrence. Now some teams are starting to have to shore it up in the middle with pass protectors that are at least maybe not elite like those guys, but at the same time can match up with them.
Let's talk about a couple other things going on around the NFL. So yesterday, the news came down that Garrett Wilson got his bag. It looks like a four-year, $130 million contract from the New York Jets. That's all well and good, and he is a dynamic receiver and everything, but he's going to have Justin Fields throwing him the football this year. Were you surprised by that contract? I mean, what do you think he'll be able to do with a guy like Fields at quarterback?
I think Garrett Wilson is fine. I think he's another one of those Ohio State guys that was really, really good coming out for like about 4 or 5 years. And still, you're going to see it with Jeremiah Smith here in a few years. But I think that on a good team, like, he's not better than any of the eight best receivers in the league. And so it's kind of hard for me to say that, like, oh, he's your number one that you should be building a receiver core around. And especially when you add in the fact that Justin Fields is there. But I think the Jets story is not about who their players are necessarily, which is a shocking thing for a football team. It's about Aaron Glenn coming in and trying to change the culture. I think that the Jets could have a lot of, remember, if you remember the Lions first season under Dan Campbell, they're like 1-11, but every game was within 3 points. I think we can see a season a lot like that with the Jets. And maybe they come out on the other side of some of those wins just because their defense might be a little bit better than what the Lions was at the time. But I think Aaron Glenn, if he is going to be successful, and I think he will be, it's going to be a look a lot like that season where they might win 6 games. But at the same time, it was super close the entire time. And Garrett Wilson is going to be the highlight reel of their offense. But that's only because that's about all they have, him and Breece Hall. And so, like, it is kind of – and Breece Hall even, like, I know he's a Kansas kid and everything, but he's one head of a two-headed monster that you probably don't have a second head of in New York. And so that's what's kind of interesting with the Jets is, like, they're bringing in all these new pieces, but at the same time, they're trying to build a culture, and at least going to look like the New York Jets for another season.
Brees the Beast needs to be a one-headed monster. Yeah. Just feed that dude the ball. Braylon Allen, get out of here.
Sure.
Go, Brees. I saw this, Felix, yesterday come out. It was, I believe it was ESPN, did a poll of all the coaches and executives and everything, and it's a quarterback list. Mahomes is still at the top. The top four are very predictable. It's Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Jackson. I think those four are clearly the four. Mahomes is still one. And it's, we have this discussion a lot, and I know that Chiefs fans get hypersensitive to ever the notion that anybody could ever do anything better than Patrick Mahomes. But I do think these other three guys deserve some credit. Mahomes had the 17th best quarterback rating in football last year. I'm with the executives. I'm still taking Mahomes over any of them. But we've seen a chink in the armor, I think, the last year especially, but the last couple of years. Have any of these guys closed the gap, you think, to be in the conversation with Mahomes yet?
If they were beating him when it mattered the most, yeah. Like, I mean, if Joe Burrow, we still kind of like have him mythologically in our heads because he beat him 3 or 4 years ago at this point. Josh Allen, the same reason
why Allen beats him all the time, just not in the playoffs.
Exactly, when it matters the most. And like, they keep getting closer, like literally inches away from beating them this year. And so I think that sure, they're closing the gap in that manner, but at the same time, when you see that the Kansas City Chiefs just win 3-point games no matter what, and I think it was Nick Wright who said it last year, the Kansas City Chiefs' superpowers that they can beat anybody by 3 points, whether it's the Carolina Panthers last year, who were one of the worst teams in football, or at least it looked like it, or it can be the Buffalo Bills, who they beat by 3 points in the AFC Championship game. So it can be anybody that they beat by just 3 points. And so it's kind of hard to judge whether or not teams are really closing the gap, because Kansas City beats everybody by just 3 points. And then you add in the fact that, yeah, Kansas City just keeps going to the Super Bowl and running into Buffalo over and over again. They ran into Baltimore just last year in the route to winning the Super Bowl. Cincinnati can't even get to the playoffs. And so, sure, these guys are great individually, but at the same time, when it matters the most, when we judge quarterbacks the most, which unfairly or not, when we judge quarterbacks the most, which is in the playoffs, they've come up against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs and just said, and they can't match up for one reason or another. And it's Lamar Jackson making poor throws and Josh Allen's false stepping on his tush push. And so I think that it's all these little things, but when you're playing games that are scored by 3 points, it's going to be those little things that get you.
I agree. It's still that thing. I also think, do you subscribe to this theory that Mahomes is going to cook this year statistically? I think he's going to pile it up this year, like I thought he would have last year, and then all his players got hurt.
Well, I think that I think about it more from a bird's eye perspective. Like, how many MVPs do you expect Patrick Mahomes to win in his entire career? He's 30 now, so he's going to have to start picking up a couple more. I mean, if you think about it like that, I know it doesn't really matter because he's more focused on Super Bowls. I'm thinking he's going to win about 4 or 5. He's at 2 right now. So I can see him picking up one right now. And that would make sense because of like what you're saying, with all the guys coming back and teams just not having seen a Hollywood Brown or a Rashee Rice in this offense for a year.
Yeah, it's all there. All right, Felix, what do you have cooking for us on your radar here that we can find? I guess on X is the easiest way to look at all of it.
Yeah, we'll have another episode of Let's Talk Ball coming out tomorrow. We've been going through all the division previews. We'll be going through the AFC East, so we'll be talking about our Kansas City Chiefs here in a couple of weeks. But we had an interview with Coach Drew Dallas, head coach of the national champion Hutchinson College Blue Dragons. We had him on. That'll be coming out here in a few days. So just talking ball. That's all it is. Just talking football, especially throughout the summer when it's hard to get some football on.
Appropriately named Talk Ball Podcast. All right, Felix, we'll do it again next week. All right, that'll do it for us here on Sports Daily. We appreciate everybody being with us on the program today. A lot of fun. We've got the All-Star game tonight. I took the American League at -105, Tommy. You going to take your National
League? Yeah, I'm going to take the National League. I like getting plus money on them, and I'm a National League guy, so I'm hoping they can finally pull one out. They're due. They're due to get one.
Well, they got 2 years ago, but it's one out of like the last 13. So yeah, the law of averages perhaps says they are. We appreciate everybody being here. Thanks to Felix Johnson. Thanks to Max. We'll continue the debate on oblique strains related to illness, perhaps tomorrow. So for those interested in that, be ready for it. Stick with us, everybody. Thanks for being here. Bye.